Banter.
The only show.
Beat Banter.
Spin that.
Hello, I'm Sheila Rogers, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca, campus and community radio in Kingston.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. On today's show, we will cover news related to Syria, the US, Ireland, Israel, and Canada. We'll start with Syria. Israel is continuing to bomb Syria, and the Israeli government has approved the plan to expand its illegal settlements in the occupied Syrian territories, the Golan Heights. We'll see how the US is reacting to what is taking place in Syria. At one point, the White House spokesperson Matt Miller was actually laughed at by journalists when he stated that the US would support the International Criminal Court in the context of Syria. Then we will move on to Ireland. The Israeli government is mad and it closed its embassy in Ireland. We will see why. We will also cover how the Irish government has supported Palestinians so far, enough to anger the Israeli government, but also how the Irish government is falling short when it comes to supporting Palestinian rights, according to Palestine Solidarity activists in Ireland. After, we will go inside Israel. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in court for a long-awaited corruption trial, making him the first sitting leader to face criminal charges. He is charged with fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes in three separate cases. We will hear from the filmmaker Alex Gibney, whose latest documentary, The BB Files, features leaked behind-the-scenes footage of police interrogations of Netanyahu, his wife, and those accused of bribing him. Finally, we'll come back to Canada. Some Montreal protesters are unhappy with Mark Miller, the Canadian Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship. They are saying that Mark Miller witnessed that protesters were being falsely accused, but despite that, he didn't come forward to say the truth when charges were brought against them. Today, the charges were dropped and the protesters are demanding Mark Miller to resign. Stay tuned.
Israel is continuing to bomb Syria a week after Syria's longtime ruler Bashar al-Assad was ousted from power. Last night, Israel dropped what has been described as an earthquake bomb on Syrian military and air defense sites in the coastal Tartus region. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights described Israel's bombing as the heaviest strikes in Syria's coastal region in more than a decade. According to the group, Israeli forces have launched over 800 strikes on Syria over the past week. The Israeli government has also approved a plan to expand illegal settlements in the occupied Golan Heights. This comes days after Israel invaded Syrian territory to seize more of the Golan Heights. In a statement, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, quote, "Strengthening the Golan Heights is strengthening the state of Israel and is especially important at this time. We will continue to hold on to it, make it flourish and settle it."
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has confirmed the Biden administration's been in direct contact with Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the Islamist Syrian armed group that led the surprise offensive that toppled Assad.
So first, yes, we've been in contact with HTS and with other parties. We have impressed upon everyone we've been in contact with the importance of helping find Austin Tice and bring him home. And we've also shared the principles that I just laid out for our ongoing support, principles, again, that have now been adopted by countries throughout the region and well beyond. And we've communicated those.
That's direct contact,
yes.
Blinken made the comments in Jordan over the weekend. He also visited Turkey and Iraq to discuss the future of Syria. We go now to Marwan Bashara, senior political analyst at Al Jazeera. He's joining us from Doha. If you can start off by responding to the latest, Marwan, this latest news of the attacks on Syria. I think the number of Israeli strikes is at about 800 now.
It's truly incredible. Israel is setting new precedents in the Middle East. It has been doing so for the past 75, 80 years. But to this week, the way it's acting so lawlessly against Syria as a rogue state, basically bombing the hell out of its neighbor simply because there has been a change of rulers in Damascus, attempting a peaceful transitional governing there, taking care of the people, and sending all kinds of signals that they have absolutely zero intentions of getting into war with anyone. And yet, this what's called strategic opportunism on the part of the Netanyahu government, also political opportunism, just while he is on trial for corruptions and the rest of it, being a war criminal also, he's stealing the show by deflecting from what's going on in Israel, attacking Syria everywhere in Syria, while at the same time expanding in the southern part of Syria beyond the already occupied Golan Heights. And as you said, he's trying to double the illegal settlements in the Golan Heights. So all in all, Israel and Netanyahu are sending exactly the wrong messages, doing exactly the wrong provocations, and at the same time setting precedents for rogueness that I think it might not come to bite them soon, but it probably could later.
And your response, Marwan, to the summit that was held in Jordan over the weekend, what do you think came out of it, and especially Secretary of State Blinken being there?
You know, the first impression is to remember back the leaders, parole, parole, parole. You know, sometimes it feels like only words and more words come out of Arab leaders and Arab summits, especially those with the United States. But then if you look a little more deep into it, you would know that a lot of those leaders who were convening the summit in Aqaba have already been normalizing relations with the former Assad regime, despite its murderous corruption, despite its narco-state criminal kleptocracy. They've invited him back in the Arab League in 2022 and embraced him in 2023, and they were actually strengthening economic relations with him, the most of them. But now they were suddenly meeting together and to talk about human rights and peaceful transition and minority rights in Syria, as if moving forward, or as if the past 60 years, it was mainly the majority rights that were violated in Syria by the Assad dictatorship. Be that as it may, I think while they sing from the same sheet, I think they have very different approaches to what security means, to what stability means in Syria, to what even terrorism means. They don't agree on this, that, and the other thing. And in fact, each and every one of the major powers in that meeting supports different military forces in Syria. Just to give you a simple example, we have now, what, 5 or 6 military forces in Syria. We have the Free Syrian Army. We have the National Syrian Army. We have the militias, Syrian forces in the south. We have the Syrian Democratic Forces. And we have, of course, HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, all in addition to Assad's forces that remain there, as well as ISIS. A lot of these groups are supported by some of these people convening, including the Turks and the Emiratis and the Jordanians and so on and so forth. So it's going to be a very complicated way forward. And I remain doubtful that the Arab regimes are serious about assisting the Syrian people moving forward.
I want to turn to President Biden speaking last week after the fall of Assad.
So we carried out a comprehensive sanction program. against him and all those responsible for atrocities against the Syrian people. Second, we maintained our military presence in Syria, our counter-ISIS, to counter the support of local partners as well on the ground, their partners, never ceding an inch of territory, taking out leaders of ISIS, ensuring that ISIS can never establish a safe haven there again. Third, we've supported Israel's freedom of action against Iranian networks in Syria and against actors aligned with Iran who transported lethal aid to Lebanon.
That was President Biden taking credit for the fall of Assad. What your response, Marwan?
I tell you, it's mind-boggling, trying to whitewash genocide by saying, well, after all, 15 months of genocide, maybe, you know, we were on the right track after all. Look at us, you know, we are so great, you know, and basically tapping himself on the shoulders after all the war crimes that were committed in Lebanon and in Palestine. And now he's taking credit for some change that happened in Syria by the Syrian people, despite the complicity and the conspiracies against the Syrian people, and despite the embrace of the Assad regime by Biden's allies in the region. The second thing that always came to mind is that, you know, Blinken and Biden keep warning us about ISIS, without mentioning that ISIS is basically the creation of the American invasion and occupation of Iraq, of the stupidities committed by everywhere from Bush to Obama, how they dealt with the question of Iraq, including the de-ba'athifications, including the dissolving of the Iraqi military, that basically led directly to rise of ISIS. So really, American intervention in the region, whether it is in Iraq or in Syria, and certainly in Palestine, has been catastrophic. Trying to claim credit for what happened in Syria or could happen in Syria, it's just beyond the pale.
I wanted to turn to the spokesperson, Matt Miller, who was questioned by journalists recently.
So we support the work of the ICC. I know that obviously we have disagreed with their hold on. Let me address
it. Support the work of the ICC.
Let me just answer the question. Let me answer the question, because I was addressing that before you interrupted me. We obviously have had a jurisdictional dispute with them as it relates to cases against Israel. That is a long-standing jurisdictional dispute. But that said, we have also made clear that we support broadly their work, and we have supported their work in other cases, despite our jurisdictional dispute when it comes to Israel.
So that's State Department spokesperson Matt Miller being questioned by AP's Matt Lee, talking about why he would support Assad being brought up on war crimes charges at the International Criminal Court, but doesn't feel the same way about Netanyahu and Gallant. In fact, that was just a few days after Gallant had been in Washington, D.C., even though the ICC has issued this arrest warrant, meeting with U.S. officials. Marwan Bashara.
You know, Amy, it's funny, right? I mean, each and every era has an image that speaks to it, that represents it, that reflects it. This was one of them. Laughing at the State Department spokesperson, the Biden administration spokesperson, for, again, underlining, emphasizing, and basically speaking clearly to its double standard and hypocrisy. But, you know, as an international relations observer, let me tell you, America does not have double standard in the Middle East. It has a single standard, and that's American interest, American Israeli interest. So it's not really a double standard. I mean, you know, global powers, empires, and notably the United States. It looks like for us, you know, intellectuals and others, moralists, that there is double standard. But at the end of the day, they have a single narrow American strategic, Israeli strategic interest, and they've always spoken to it, defended it, justified it. So that's why for 15 months we've seen At Al Jazeera, we've reported from live from Gaza, the unraveling genocide, the war on doctors, the war on journalists, the war on children, on schools, on hospitals. And a lot of this has trickled down to the American media, and we've seen it. And I think the Biden administration understands that there is a genocide, trying to get off technicality. Of course, again, this was exposed to be the total hypocrisy, which it is. It's okay for Putin to be taken or indicted by the ICC, and Assad, it's okay. Even the Myanmar generals, it's okay, but not the Israeli leaders. It's hypocrisy, double standard for the rest of us, for America. It's that one single standard, American-Israeli interest.
I also wanted to ask you about Gaza, which the rest of the world keeps trying to forget. The atrocities still going on there. At least three journalists killed in Israeli attacks this weekend, including Al Jazeera cameraman Ahmed Alou, as well as Mohamed Baloucha, who last November was first reported about the intensive care babies who died after Israeli soldiers forcibly evacuated the Al-Nasser hospital. Your response to these latest attacks on your fellow journalists?
You know, we've been covering this for a while, and at one point you start asking yourself the question, is this intentional or is it actually, war, as it were? You know, just it happens. But then when we started investigating and others started investigating, and when you start, the UN started looking at it, as we did when our own journalists were killed in the West Bank, clearly there is an intentional policy of assassinating journalists in Gaza. They are the eyewitnesses of the unraveling genocide, and hence getting rid of them is a thing that Israel has been doing now for 15, 16 months. Now, why has this become more and more believable is when then more and more human rights organizations start reporting about how children are being targeted. To shooting at children in the head and in the chest. We've seen that by doctors, including Western doctors, American doctors reporting about that. So then slowly but surely one starts to believe that, in fact, there is a government, there is an army that is capable of killing doctors intentionally, killing journalists intentionally, in fact, killing children intentionally. And all that happens, while I don't want to talk about American journalists, while Israeli journalists are silent. Israeli journalists are silent as countless Palestinian journalists are killed by their military. Israeli doctors are silent as Israel assassinate countless doctors in the 15, 16 clinical or hospital facilities in Gaza, or what remains of them. So it's not just the incredible ugliness of it all, the rogueness of it all, the inhumanity of it all. What kills me is the silence in Israel, in the United States, and elsewhere.
Israel is shutting its embassy in Ireland, accusing the government of anti-Israel policies. Dublin has strongly opposed the war on Gaza and recognized a Palestinian state. It rejects Israel's accusations and says it stands for human rights and international law. So what's behind this move and why now? This is Inside Story. Welcome to the program. I'm Darin Abugaida. Israel says that it will close its embassy in Ireland, accusing the government of being anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. The Irish Prime Minister, Simon Harris, has strongly rejected the accusations. He says his country is pro-peace, pro-human rights, and pro-international law. It comes just after Ireland backed South Africa's genocide case at the International Court of Justice. And Israel's ambassador has not been seen in Dublin since May, when Ireland said it would recognize a Palestinian state along with Spain and Norway. So what's behind Israel's decision? And why now? We'll get to our guests in a moment. First, this report from Hamza Mohammed.
Israel is set to close its embassy in Ireland. It follows Dublin's decision to support South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice last week. Israeli Foreign Minister Gideon Saar accused Ireland of having what he called extreme anti-Israeli policies, a view rejected by the Irish Prime Minister.
This is deeply regrettable, and I will push back very strongly against any attempt by any country to misrepresent Ireland's position. Now, Ireland is not anti-Israeli, but Ireland is absolutely anti the starvation of children, is absolutely anti the killing of civilians, and is absolutely pro-peace, pro-international law, and pro-human rights.
While diplomatic relations have not been severed, Ireland has been regularly attacked by Israeli government politicians for its support of Palestinians. Dublin has been a strong critic of Israel's devastating war on Gaza, which has now killed more than 45,000 Palestinians since October last year. Last month, after the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for war crimes in Gaza, Dublin said the Israeli leader will be arrested if he visited Ireland. And in May, Ireland, alongside Spain and Norway, recognized Palestine as an independent state, leading Israel to recall its envoys from those countries. One of Ireland's most senior former diplomats says Israel's action could be seen as picking on Ireland in particular.
Israel has chosen to close its embassy in Dublin, but not its embassies in Madrid and Oslo. Ireland has worked in lockstep with Norway and Spain. So there's something going on there. I mean, possibly they think it's easier to pick on a small country. Ireland is more than able to stand up for itself.
And as Israeli troops invaded southern Lebanon in October, Israel called on Ireland and the UN to withdraw peacekeepers from the country, including Irish troops. Dublin rejected the request. The same month, Israeli forces attacked UNIFIL positions. In 1980, Ireland became the first EU member state to call for self-determination for the Palestinian people. Public support for the Palestinian cause is deep. Reflecting long-held historical identification with their plight, mirroring centuries of land theft and expulsion of people in Ireland under British rule which ended a century ago. Ireland says it regrets the move by Israel and wants to maintain diplomatic ties with no plans to close its embassy in Tel Aviv. Hamza Mohammed, Al Jazeera, for Inside Story.
Okay, let's now bring in our guest. Joining us from Dublin is Michal McDonagh, who's a Dublin city councillor with the Sinn Féin party. In Tel Aviv, Alan Pinkas, a former Israeli diplomat and writer. And in Limerick, Ireland, Zoe Lawler, who's the chairperson of the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thank you so much for your time. Michal McDonagh, I'll start with you. What's your initial reaction to this?
Well, many of us have been calling for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador, particularly in the wake of the genocidal actions of Israel in Palestine and Gaza. For many months, we've made that call. So effectively, the Israeli ambassador has expelled herself. The Israeli embassy is now closed. On one hand, it is, I suppose, a tribute to the huge degree of solidarity that there is in Ireland with the Palestinian people, which you saw there in your report. It's very extensive. We've had people on the streets almost on a monthly basis in their tens of thousands in solidarity with the people of Palestine. So the move, I suppose, comes as no surprise. It's accompanied with a very hostile statement, which not only accuses Ireland of being anti-Israel, but anti-Semitic. And again, we see the misuse of this term by the Israeli government, where any criticism of Israel is described as anti-Semitism. So it's a significant development, very much in line, though, with what has been happening up to now. All diplomatic norms, all international law, respect for those, clearly counts for nothing with the Israeli government.
Okay, Zoe Lawler, on that allegation of anti-Semitism, does that argument have any basis in your opinion?
Absolutely not. It's just a smear on the Irish state and the Irish people. People here are not motivated by racism. People here are motivated by wanting to stand with our Palestinian sisters and brothers. And we're motivated by not wanting a genocide to go on. And really, the notion that this would be the root cause of why, you know, the Irish government has taken any of the steps it has, or that why people here stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. It's just absolutely untrue, and it is a smear on people here. We have long-standing solidarity with Palestine in Ireland. A lot of it comes from our own history of being colonised and oppressed, and standing with, recognising that, and standing with colonised people. But as well, like millions of people all over the world, you cannot be seeing what we're seeing every day happening all over Palestine, and particularly in Gaza, and not be moved to try and do anything you can to end what's being done.
Okay, Alan Pincus, is there support for this in Tel Aviv where you are, and why do you think that Israel is doing this? I mean, is it for domestic political consumption, or is it sending a message to the international community, for any other country that could be thinking of doing the same as Ireland did, which is backing South Africa's genocide case at the ICJ? So Israel is sending a message from now saying, don't do it.
Oh, yeah, the message is don't do it. But the pretext, obviously, and the reasons for this, it's just reckless political grandstanding and pandering by a newly appointed, entirely inexperienced foreign minister whose idea of diplomacy is to shut down an embassy. The question is not whether or not Irish policies have been anti-Israeli. By Israeli standards, they have been anti-Israeli. They in no way have been anti-Semitic, and I totally agree with Ms. Lawler here. But the question is, if this is, you know, if this is the bravado, the Rambo-like, the pumping of the chest diplomacy, then why hasn't Israel done this to Spain or to Norway? You know, picking on Ireland is easy. It's relatively cost-free. It's an EU member, yet not a NATO member. So in terms of being cautious and grandstanding at the same time, it serves its purpose. Now, whether or not this is a sign of things to come, I doubt that very much. I mean, I really dare this government do the same to France, to Britain, to Germany, to Italy, to Norway, to Spain, or to any other bigger country in the EU than Ireland is.
But I mean, just to be clear, though, I mean, Israel has taken steps towards some of these countries, like, for example, Norway. Okay, it didn't go to the lengths it has with Ireland, but it did expel eight diplomats at a point in time just a few months ago.
Well, yeah, that, you're absolutely correct, Doreen. But the difference is, and the pretext that is officially being employed here or being stated here, is not Ireland's policies per se, but the fact that Ireland, quote unquote, intervened, meaning joined South Africa's petition to the International Court of Justice, accusing Israel of genocide. That, according to the foreign minister and according to the official statement, was a quote unquote red line that Israel will not tolerate when it is crossed. But honestly, I mean, I understand the anger. I understand why people are raising their eyebrows. It was just political grandstanding of the most reckless and stupid kind, but it is just grandstanding.
Okay, Michal, this is the statement that was issued by the Irish foreign minister. This is part of it. He says that I believe firmly in the importance of maintaining diplomatic channels of communication and regret that this decision has been taken. So does this mean that Ireland then will continue having diplomatic relations with Israel, despite it now supporting the ICJ case, which accuses Israel of committing genocide? And why does Ireland want relations?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm not a spokesperson for the Irish government, but from their point of view, they have taken the line that diplomatic channels should remain open, while at the same time, they have strongly opposed what Israel is doing in Gaza and in Palestine as a whole. And they would see that as consistent. Many of us would have advocated, and I would advocate, the breaking of diplomatic ties, because Israel has gone so far beyond any concept of international law or human rights or humanity. So that's the context of it. I think the actions of the Irish government have been relatively restrained when you consider the degree of support there is in Ireland and across the political spectrum, indeed, for Palestine. And many people have called for the Irish government to go much further than they have. For example, the Occupied Territories Bill is a piece of legislation which has been in our parliament but has not been progressed by government. This would ban trade with Israel's illegal settlements. Unfortunately, up to now, the government has stalled that legislation, although now there are signs, and coming out of our recent general election, where parties made commitments to support that bill, there are signs that that will be progressed, which would be very welcome. And this, indeed, may also be another reason why the Israeli government has taken this decision, because there is the prospect of that legislation being passed in the Irish Parliament.
Zoe, to what extent do you think that that issue of the bill that was just being mentioned has been a point of contention? And also, just recently, the Irish Prime Minister said that the authorities would be detaining Benjamin Netanyahu if he arrived in Ireland. That is, of course, down to the International Criminal Court issuing an arrest warrant for him. So how would you describe the relationship between Israel and Ireland recently and whether tensions have been escalating?
Well, I suppose tensions have been escalating. It's always been a bit fraught. But at the end of the day, as Micheál said, we've long called for the Irish government to cut all ties, diplomatic ties with Israel. And we want them to enact the legislation, the Occupied Territories Bill. We have two other bills, the Illegal Israeli Settlements Divestment Bill and the Arms Embargo Bill. So we want the government to go further in its measures. And I do think that it's possible that the because they have said that they would enact the Occupied Territories Bill pending review, it is possible that this is one of the reasons that this saber rattling from the Israeli government is going on. So we disagree that the diplomatic channels should be kept open with Israel, because really the Ireland, Micheál Martin said the other day about the genocide case that they want to broaden the definition of genocide at the ICJ in order to end the culture of impunity. But the Irish state is part of the culture of impunity that has enabled Israel to commit the crimes that it commits daily against Palestinians. So we would very much call for meaningful action, for sanctions on Israel, for an end for Irish trade, especially dual-use trade with the Israeli state.
I mean, you say, you as well as Micheál say that you'd like the Irish government to go further. What would you like them to do? Because if you listen to some politicians, they say, look, we have recognized the state of Palestine. We've increased funding to UNRWA at a time when a lot of countries have withdrawn their funding. We're now supporting South Africa's genocide case against Israel. So what is it that's missing for you?
Again, as I said, it's those three pieces of legislation. So they would go some way towards holding Israel to account for what it's doing to the Palestinian people. If there were trade sanctions on Israel as well, that would be meaningful. We have dual-use trade. Our dual-use trade with Israel has actually increased in the last year and a half. We have multiple reports of Israeli weapons going through Irish airspace. So that has to end. We allow, the Irish state allows the US military to use Shannon Airport, and the US military is a full and active partner in this genocide. So that should end immediately, and all diplomatic ties should be cut. So again, you know, the bare minimum is not enough, especially given what we're witnessing in Gaza right now. So that's why we want concrete, meaningful measures from the Irish government to sanction Israel.
Okay, Micheál, you were mentioning earlier on why that you think that not enough is being done for the Palestinian people on behalf of the politicians in Ireland. Why do you think that is?
Well, as Zoe has said, we need to see the enactment of the Occupied Territories Bill. We need to see trade sanctions.
But my question is, what is stopping all of this from going ahead?
Well, the the government so far, the actions they have taken, has largely been pushed by public opinion. It's very much a groundswell of opinion, horror at what the Israeli state is doing to the Palestinians. And that has pushed the Irish government to the extent that it has taken these actions. So that's really what is required for their pressure to do that. It should be mentioned also the EU context. We've highlighted here that Ireland, Spain and Norway supported the recognition of the Palestinian state. This highlights the inaction of other EU states, and in fact worse than inaction, their support for the Israeli state through all this horror that we're seeing. And that is it. That's something that really needs to be raised strongly within the EU by the Irish government, that it cannot be tolerated that the EU, worse than standing idly by, that many EU countries are actively supporting the Israeli state in this war. So that would be a very, very important role. And a very positive start was made by the Irish state working together with Spain and Norway. And as has been said, it's significant that it's Ireland that is picked in terms of closing the embassy, because we're an easy target. The consequences may be less, are seen as less serious for Israel if Israel had targeted the other two states.
Zoe, there is an argument, I wonder what if you can react to this, that Ireland has done everything over the past few years to make itself attractive to sort of large multinationals, and it has a low corporate tax rate, right? So there's the American Chamber of Commerce that has also named Ireland as, quote, the global location of choice for talent and innovation. So that economic dependency by Ireland on the United States somewhat, does it hinder Ireland's ability and willingness to stand with the Palestinians as much as you'd like the country to stand with the Palestinians? Is it worried about U.S. pressure?
Possibly worried about pressure. I personally don't. I think that's a smokescreen, because I think corporations act in their own financial interests, not in interests of morality. So I don't think the Irish state, if the tax system stayed the same, I don't think they would be running away from Ireland. But that might be something that the government likes to, you know, put out there as an excuse for not taking action. There's a part of the Irish government that likes to be seen as the best, you know, the best in class, not rocking the boat. We do that at an EU level and with the US especially. But I don't think corporate interests care about ethics at all. So I don't think that's valid. So really they should.
But you don't think that Ireland does have a balancing act to play with the United States, and especially now with Trump in the White House, who, of course, is a supporter of Israel and Israel's policies?
Possibly at a political level. I don't think in terms of the corporations, as you mentioned. But, you know, why don't we just stand up to it and, you know, take the lead here and, you know, do what the people want? As Micheál said, it's the huge pressure from the mass street mobilizations that we've had all over the country for 14 months, weekly, monthly, at a national level, and the government should be reflecting the will of the people and not be worried about, you know, what and other politicians think about us, and really just stand up and do the right thing.
The official death toll in Gaza has topped 45,000. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is fighting a different battle inside Israeli courts. The first sitting Israeli prime minister to face criminal charges, he's finally taking the stand at his long-running corruption trial. The case has gone on for years. He's charged with fraud, breach of trust, accepting bribes in three separate cases. We turn now to an extraordinary new documentary that offers an in-depth look into the charges against Netanyahu, featuring leaked footage of police interrogations of Netanyahu himself, his wife Sarah, and those accused of bribing him. This is the trailer to the BB Files.
Our first question for you is whether you or any of your family members have received any gifts or favors from wealthy businessmen in the last decade.
This is preposterous and insane. You're trying to incriminate the Prime Minister on nonsense.
Case, the facts are really simple.
The Prime Minister and his wife are getting gifts.
It's a total lie.
And on the other side, Netanyahu did favors.
We must find a way to reward him.
What do you need to reward the Prime Minister for?
Government officials are not allowed to take gifts. This is corruption.
The police, they investigated everybody.
If this comes out, I'm dead.
What did you get?
Champagne, cigars, shalsheret, tabak.
So Netanyahu is very important. Both of them never surrendered, never compromised.
My husband is the strongest Prime Minister we've ever had.
They start to believe that they are untouchable. After the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power.
When people serve for too long, it gets into their heads.
The indictment made him dependent on the extreme right in Israel.
He's now captive to their whims.
This is nonsense.
Put all Israel in the turmoil.
Netanyahu is the architect of chaos.
He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability. It's not a cover-up. He tried to kill the system.
Nobody is above the law.
Do you remember that line from The Godfather?
If your friends close, keep your enemies closer.
That's the trailer for the Bibi Files, leaked secret footage of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The new documentary, The Bibi Files, is directed by Alexis Bloom and produced by Alex Gibney. The Bibi Files cannot be legally distributed in Israel due to privacy laws. For more, we're joined by filmmaker Alex Gibney. In 2008, he won an Oscar for his film Taxi to the Dark Side, about an Afghan man who was tortured in prison at Bagram. Thanks so much for being with us again, Alex. I went to see this film the other night at the theater. This is powerful. Explain why in this trailer we can't see Netanyahu's face in these deposition tapes. And how did you get these deposition tapes when he, his wife, his son Yair, and others are being questioned by police?
Okay, I'll answer the. Hi, Amy. Answer the questions in reverse. I was leaked these tapes. They're interrogation videotapes done by the police that were a precursor to the indictment of Netanyahu on corruption charges. And in the tapes, you can see Netanyahu, his wife Sara, his son Yair, and many of the people who attempted to bribe Netanyahu. I thought they were explosive. And very important. This, by the way, was before 10/7 or the war on Gaza. This is when there was a big crisis over the judicial reform attempts by Netanyahu, which, of course, were done in part so he could elude any consequence from, impending bribery charges. But the key thing to understand about distribution in Israel is when I got these leaked tapes, I made a promise to the source that I would not distribute the film in Israel because the source could go to prison. There are privacy laws that make it mandatory that if you are photographed as part of an official proceeding, i.e. a police interrogation, you can't cause those videotapes to be released. So unless you get the permission of Netanyahu and Sarah, et cetera, which wasn't going to happen. So anyway, that is the occasion of why this film can't be released and why we had to, black bar the trailer. in order so that the trailer wouldn't be freely visible. I couldn't cause the trailer to be freely visible in Israel, though I should say that it's being widely pirated there.
So Netanyahu is going after you?
Netanyahu, as soon as it was announced that we were going to premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, he went to an Israeli court and tried to stop the screening in Toronto. Now, how that was going to happen, I don't know. But in any event, it was denied. But he certainly tried to stop us. And I understand the Netanyahu administration, through a number of mechanisms, are trying very hard to go after a guy named Raviv Drucker, who's one of the producers of the film and is a longtime Israeli journalist who is has an expertise in this kind of corruption, has been the bane of a number of prime ministers, but particularly Netanyahu.
Let's go to another clip from the BB Files. It begins with Ami Ayalon, the former head of Israel's internal security service, Shin Bet.
And after the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power. He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability. He survived when we fight each other. He survived when our enemies fight each other.
A forever war is beneficial to Netanyahu. This makes people feel like they are always in danger, like they always need him. There is always some huge threat. I think that that helps him remain prime minister.
That last voice, the young Israeli woman, Gili Schwartz, is from Kibbutz Be'eri, where more than 100 people were killed on October 7th last year. Alex, if you can elaborate on what they are saying. I mean, as we speak, Netanyahu is in court in Israel right now. What this means, they say he wants to wage wider war because otherwise he's no longer going to be protected by the prime ministership, by being prime minister.
That's right. I mean, I think in strictly speaking, this is a film about corruption, and it starts with petty corruption, being bribed with gifts and cigars, champagne, jewelry. But then the ultimate corruption is how he's tried to elude a reckoning for his misdeeds. And in so doing, he wraps himself in the mantle of prime minister and then wages endless war. Now, I can't think of really anything more corrupt than somebody who's administering the killing of women and children in order to be able to stay in power. But that is what they are alleging, and that is what the film is about.
Let's go to another clip from the BB Files. This one begins with Prime Minister Netanyahu addressing the U.S. Congress this past July.
Together we shall defend our common civilization. Together we shall secure a brilliant future for both our nations.
Well, I would say that tragically, the Americans don't know how to call him out. There was no plan for ending the war of Gaza, bringing the hostages home, and changing dynamics in the region. And things only got worse. Netanyahu is the architect of chaos. And as we speak, when all eyes are on the front in Gaza and the front in Lebanon, he is implementing his plan in the West Bank with the extreme right. He may create a situation where it's irreversible.
And that's Nimrod Novick, former advisor to Shimon Peres in the BB Files, the documentary produced by Alex Gibney, who's with us now. So talk about how this trial plays out right now. I think most people in the United States aren't even aware. I mean, you have the horror in Gaza. You have what's now taking place in Syria, what's happening in Lebanon. Explain how this all fits in.
Well, this is a trial that's been going on for 4 years. Netanyahu has been trying to elude a reckoning related to these charges for that much time. And what he constantly does is to wrap himself in the mantle of leadership. And so what better way to do that? And this is a tried and true political formula, as grisly and as grotesque as it is to wage war, is to continue to use weapons and say we're in danger of being annihilated, so we must strike back. But I mean, the destruction that's going on in Gaza, for example, is a kind of wanton destruction at this point that is just beyond any kind of moral reckoning. So I think that also the United States bears some responsibility for this. That's why we included those clips of him at the Congress. You know, we supply Israel with so much aid and so much.
And to be clear, Sada, his wife, and when she's being questioned, she yells at the police and says, do you know how he's treated in the United States when he addresses a joint session of Congress? Alex Gibney, we're going to have to leave it there. Academy Award-winning filmmaker and producer of The Beebe Files.
A group of pro-Palestine protesters is calling for the resignation of Immigration Minister Mark Miller. Speaking outside the Palais de Justice Thursday morning, Samar Alakdour told reporters that she's tired of waiting for an apology from the minister after his staff accused her and two other protesters of criminal harassment.
The fact that he had time to reach out and apologize, but hasn't done so, makes him complicit in the crime of false accusations that his employees committed against the three of us, including his own constituent.
Alakdour is referencing a September 5th incident in which she followed the minister to his van after he left an event in Verdun, criticizing his government's handling of the war in Gaza. Footage shared with CKUT by Alakdour's lawyer, Barbara Bedant, shows Alakdour standing in the street beside the passenger window while filming with her phone. Bedant says it was that footage that resulted in the Crown dropping the charges against Alakdour and two other protesters last month. But she also says the charges should never have been filed in the first place.
In this situation, there was a member of parliament who had personal knowledge that peaceful protesters, were being falsely accused because Mark Miller was there. He was there at the incident. And so he saw that the van he was in was not being surrounded. He saw that the van he was in was not being banged by an angry crowd. He was a personal witness to the fact that no crime had occurred.
Alakdour has been leading sit-ins outside the minister's constituency office since early this year, after her 13-year-old daughter Jenna died waiting for clearance to leave Gaza. Within the city, she's the most visible critic of the Canadian government's handling of the war, including the temporary resident visa program for those fleeing Gaza, which has fallen short of meeting its 5,000-person target, a target that protesters say is far below what Ukrainian refugees were given and what they would like to see for Palestinians. Alakdour says that those protests have been met with continued opposition from Miller staffers in Montreal.
While Mark Miller takes every opportunity when talking to the media to dehumanize me and my comrades, his very staff are the ones who kept harassing us, calling the cops on us.
Two of those staffers were the ones who filed the charges. Protester Mohamed Mansour, who was named in the suit alongside Alakdour, told reporters he's filed countercharges against them for false accusations. He says he hopes it will act as a deterrent against similar claims, as the ones against him resulted in a months-long legal battle and an almost two-day detention.
It was a shocking revelation to see how the justice system works in Quebec. I mean, I had no idea. Like, I was treated as if I were a violent person, and I'm not.
The protesters say this is part of a larger pattern of profiling experienced by the pro-Palestine movement. In addition to the Mark Miller incident, Alakdour has also been handcuffed and fined for writing Free Palestine in chalk outside of City Hall. The SBBM told CKUT in a statement that out of over 500 protests in the past 14 months, criminal incidents have been reported in only around 10 of them. In that time, they say there have been just over 100 arrests in demonstrations related to the war in Gaza. But Concordia sociologist Ted Rutland, who studies policing in Canada, says those figures don't tell the whole story.
Considering the number of protests, that's a small number of arrests. But what we see is, one, is that many of these arrests, there's no basis for them, and so the charges are eventually dropped. So the fact that they're using arrests abusively is already a problem. But what we're also seeing is protests where there are no arrests, but an incredible amount of force.
Minister Miller's office did not respond to a request for comment from CKUT. But after his constituency office was vandalized in July, the minister wrote on Twitter that it had been under, quote, daily threat. And later in the summer, former Public Safety Minister Marco Mendicino called for protective zones around MPs, which would see anyone who intimidated or harassed politicians and staff within 50 to 100 meters subject to harsher criminal penalties, including jail time. While he says those measures would help protect people looking to enter public life, Mansour says he's afraid those measures would be used to curb peaceful protest.
I believe if we cannot complain about our politicians, then what is democracy? If we can see that they are doing something or not doing something that they should, and we cannot speak out against them, I mean, what kind of system is that?
For CKUT, I'm Jules Bujal with the Local Journalism Initiative.
That's it for this hour. On today's show, we focus on the latest bombing campaign by the Israeli military in Syria. We also saw why the U.S. White House spokesperson was laughed at by journalists during press briefing. Then we focused on the latest from Ireland and saw how the Irish government's support for Palestinians' rights angered the Israeli government recently. Then we looked at the corruption trial against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that finally started, making him the first sitting Israeli Prime Minister to face criminal charges. Of course, not for the crimes committed against Palestinians. And finally, we saw why Montreal protesters are asking our Minister of Immigration to resign. If you missed part of the show, you can go to CKUT's website at cqt.ca and listen to it again. All the episodes are archived on our page. Just click on the name of the show and you will find them. You will also find the link to the archive on CFRC's website at cfrc.ca. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free Palestine.
listen to a really good song, I start nodding my head like I'm saying yes to every beat. Yes, 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 this rocks. And then sometimes I switch it up like, no! No! Don't stop a rocking!
Every Friday morning, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Can't possibly find it funny anymore. It's been years. Let it go.